Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So how did you celebrate Veterans Day? Did you wear a poppy and think of Flanders Fields and Colonel John McRae? Or did you watch a war movie and think it was authentic, even though you couldn't smell the blood or your own mud? Did you celebrate by watching an NFL game and taking a knee in your living room during the national anthem? Did you boycott? I haven't watched the NFL much. I mean, I look at the Bears from time to time, but I don't watch a whole game. And I really don't miss it, but I have been thinking about veterans. I want to make this clear up front, though. I have never served in the military. And I've been thinking, too, about the great science fiction writer Robert Heinlein and about my late friend, the great Pulitzer Prize-winning Tribune editor and publisher Jack Fuller, a veteran of the U.S. Army during Vietnam. Years ago, Jack would want me to go to Washington for those imposing journalism political dinners, like the White House Correspondents' Dinner and the Gridiron Club, where the president makes speeches and club members perform musical skits, and the rest of us wear tuxedos or white tie and tails. At one of those dinners outside, the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, the great conservative and a hero of mine, bummed a cigarette from me. I thought that was cool. But I never did like the dinners because they were part of another time to me, part of journalists sucking up to power, being involved in the empire, and I didn't like it, except there was one thing. The Marine Band would play the anthems of the various branches of the armed services, and journalists who had served in the military would stand up when they heard Anchors Away for the Navy, and so on. Jack was in the Army, so when they'd play Caissons Come Rolling Along, he'd stand, as did the other veterans. At one of these dinners, he looked to me and said, "Look at see how few journalists would stand. Every year you see fewer and fewer people standing," he'd say, and the reason was clear. Once, just about everybody enlisted or were drafted, but in this modern period, people who hold up a mirror to America, people like journalists, people who offer opinions and shape public policy and politics, and politicians, don't have much connection to the military. It was that divide he could see coming, the way brilliant men can see things across the horizon, something breaking before it happens. And Jack probably wouldn't like the fact that I'm bringing up Robert Heinlein, the dean of science fiction, but he's got a place here too in this. Heinlein wrote many books over his many, many decades. I can't list them all. There's Stranger in a Strange Land, Citizen of the Galaxy, The Puppet Masters, his libertarian novel The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, and many, many, many more. As a kid, without video games or much TV, I read his so-called juvenile novels first, like Have Spacesuit Will Travel, about a boy who wins a spacesuit in a contest and begins to study science and engineering so he can make it spaceworthy. How many NASA engineers were influenced by that, we'll never know. And then there was Starship Troopers, and I loved that one. It was made into a terrible, idiotic movie considered a betrayal of his philosophy. It was made as some kind of ridiculous, fascist fantasy about bug killing. That's not what Heinlein would have wanted, and Heinlein fans hated it, but there was one redeeming feature, which was the beautiful Denise Richards, and she went on to marry that sleazeball Charlie Sheen, and they're both best forgotten now. But all that doesn't have anything to do with the point. The point being, in the book and mentioned in the movie was an idea about veterans and civic responsibility. In the future Earth of Starship Troopers, everyone had the same rights. But only veterans could vote. Only veterans could hold public office. Only veterans who understood civic obligation by putting their own skin in the game and risk their lives and their limbs could be citizens. All the others had rights. All those who didn't serve have rights. Rights under the law, protections, equal protections. But only citizens could vote. And the only way you became a citizen was to serve in the armed forces. These days, we talk a lot about service and we say, thank you for your service. And most of us have no idea what that means, or we think that military service, risking your life in some foreign shithole, are the same as being a member of the Peace Corps or Teach America. It is not. It's not about punching your ticket and polishing your resume with a year in South America, building wells so you could go to law school and then go become a politician. There's nothing wrong with that kind of service, but it's not Syria, it's not the demilitarized zone, it's not Afghanistan, it's not Africa chasing down terrorists as an entire continent starts going rogue. And back home, the center collapses. We saw that amongst the Republicans with Trump, and we're seeing it among the Democrats now as they move farther and farther to the left, away from their corrupt Clinton establishment center. And the reason I bring all this up now, thinking about Jack Fuller and Robert Heinlein and the veterans and our obligations, is that so many of us Americans really feel no obligation. Kneeling during the anthem, mocking the nation, the way we're governed, I get it. We're free people, we can do what we wish within reason, and patriotism isn't the state religion, and nor do I want it to be. But at the same time, we're so disconnected from civic obligation, except to mock that obligation on social media, in our films, in our media universe of me, that I just wanted to mention it. A nation, a people, an empire can't exist very long when the elites are all about narcissism, when they're all about that me. And the rest of us follow suit. So this isn't just about President Trump's narcissism, but that of the ruling class in those wealthy counties of our capital, and about all of us who hold up that mirror to Americans to show them who they are without ever having served ourselves. And people like me who often say, thank you for your service, far too easily, as if that service wasn't bought with blood and fear and great pain and great love for our country.
Let's sum up. This year we explored the failure of democracy, while the social scientists brought our world to the brink of chaos. We talked about the veterans, how they took control and imposed the stability that has lasted for generations since. You know these facts, but have I taught you anything of value this year? You, why are only citizens allowed to vote?
It's a reward, what the Federation gives you for doing federal service.
No. Something given has no value. Look, when you vote, you are exercising political authority. You're using force. And force, my friends, is violence. The supreme authority from which all other authority is derived.
My mother always said violence never solves anything.
Really? I wonder what the city fathers of Hiroshima would say about that. You.
They probably wouldn't say anything. Hiroshima was destroyed.
Correct. Naked force has resolved more issues throughout history than any other factor. The contrary opinion, that violence never solves anything, is wishful thinking at its worst. People who forget that always pay. Rico, what's the moral difference, if any, between a civilian and a citizen?
A citizen accepts personal responsibility for the safety of the body politic, defending it with his life. A civilian does not.
The exact words of the text. But do you understand it? Do you believe it?
I don't know.
Of course you don't. I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Over hill, over dale, we have hit the dusty trail, and those caissons go rolling along. Counter march right about, hear those wagon soldiers shout, while those caissons go rolling along.
Welcome to another edition of the Chicago Way. This is John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist from the Chicago Tribune. Jeff Carlin, WGN AM producer of the Rokan Show with Anna Devlantis. And later on, we're going to have Scott Stannis from the Tribune, the cartoonist. Right, Jeff?
Yeah.
But first,
This is exciting. I'm excited for this, John.
What are you excited about, man?
I'm excited about the future of the rat population in our fair town and rats all over the world who should be trembling in terror and fear because the future is bleak, at least according to our next guest.
We know that those of you who follow the Chicago Way know that Jeff Carlin is a man of science and something of a medievalist and understands Rattus Norwegius. Correct, Jeff Carlin?
Absolutely.
And what should we do with him, with rats in Chicago?
We should treat them like the Chicago Way.
That's right. They bring a rat, we bring a dog. A terrier. As you know, Chicago has a lot of rats, and Chicago has a lot of little dogs. Terriers mostly stuck in apartments, not having enough work to do, driving their owners crazy. And then there's rats again, all over the city. The mayor can't do anything about it. The streets and sand seems not to be able to do it. Neighbors are freaking out at all the rats, like my cousin Stephanie, who's got a little baby, lives on the north side. She can't stand the rats running around in the backyard. But I've got a guy. His name is Jordan Reed. Sheep shearer, hipster, and a famous, legendary rat catcher. Jordan Reed and his mongrel horde of terriers is the guy that can help us deal with the rats. Good morning, Jordan Reed.
Good morning.
How did you like that kind of AM radio intro?
Not too bad, although I think I'm a little bit too old school to be a hipster.
There you go. Okay. Well, tell us about the mongrel horde. Now, if you go to themongrelhorde.com, that's M-O-N, mongrel, G-R-O-L-H-O-A-R-D, you will find pictures of Mr. Reed, and I'll need one for my Sunday column, Mr. Reed, so we'll call you back for that. Tell us about the mongrel horde. What do you do?
So the mongrel horde is one of the only active working rat packs in the United States. It's pretty common in the UK, where hunting is pretty structured and guns are not popular, that terriers are still used for rabbits and rats. There's not a big tradition in the U.S., but I run a farm service that's been working for close to 10 years now, using terriers to teach people about rats and rodent control and farm management.
How could the people of Chicago use their dogs to kill rats instead of, I think I've always felt that dogs need a job. I think a lot of these dogs don't have a job. There are many Jack Russell Terriers, many rat terriers, West Highland Whites, Lakelands, and other kinds of ratters living in apartments without a job. What do you suggest?
Well, it kind of sounds to me that you guys need to start a club or somebody, not you in particular, but it kind of sounds like you guys need to start a rat catching club where informal or formal structure set up for teaching people a little bit about rats, basic first aid, that kind of thing. And then people that are interested in it can join in and see if their dogs have what it takes or not.
What does it take? What is a dog? What kind of dog do you need to do this, and what does it take inside a dog to kill the evil and sometimes 1 pound or larger Norway rat that we have here?
In my experience, it doesn't take a particular breed, but it takes a particular type of dog. It takes genetics, it takes instinct, and it takes opportunity. So if you have a dog that has good instincts or genetics but never introduce it to a rat, how is it going to know what a rat is? If you take a dog with bad genetics but that has instinct and opportunity, you can kind of play with those three things. But the terriers in general retain a lot more of the instinct than many other dog breeds do. So they're a great place to start if you're interested in catching and killing rats. A lot of herding dogs. I've worked with quite a few German Shepherds. So dogs with other forms of prey drive often are also interested in rats, but they're not always as interested in killing them.
So do you suggest that the people of Chicago just take their terriers and go out into the alley and start slaughtering rats left and right? Because I had a dream, Jeff Carlin and I, Jeff is also on this podcast, and Jeff and my, and our dream is to have teams of the best ratters on each block go block by block until, so we have a Super Bowl where the, you know, whoever kills the most rats wins like a prize. Like the mayor sits in your lap and gives you free parking for a year or something, maybe a contract for your friends or something. You know, it comes with T-shirts, drinking at night. barbecue, maybe some tunes. You know, like I'm thinking more like Led Zeppelin, stuff like that. But it could be anything. What do you think?
I think the club atmosphere based about fun is probably the best way to do it. And if you can encourage people any way that you can encourage them to get them willing to go out and do it, I say go for it. I certainly enjoy having my friends go along with me to a big farm, catch a lot of rats, and going and having a good beer afterwards. That certainly is in my agenda.
What's the beer of choice for rat catchers after a hard day's work?
Oh, I like all kind of beer. I'm not into the super hopped up 10% alcohol double and triple IPAs, but you know, the craft brews and the craft ciders that have been hitting the market are really, really good out here on the West Coast.
I would suggest more of maybe a cognac or, you know, like a Metaxa 15 Star, something like that, where it's cold. And because you, it's not like hunting with, you're not, you know, using firearms, so you can have a
trigger. Right, you can't discharge a terrier in an accurate
just, it's their instinct. God made them this way. And one thing about terriers that people don't understand, and Jordan and I talked the other night before this, he said that people don't know their little pet. They don't know what kind of grit and guts are in that dog. Can you talk about that?
Well, terriers were traditionally bred to work underground. So they were bred for pest control. Foxes, badgers, those kind of things that aren't normally pursued by most people. It takes a special kind of dog and a special kind of person to be interested in that kind of work. But when you have a dog that's bred to work in pitch blackness, fully underground, you're basically breeding a fearless animal and really tough ones, ones that can take a lot of punishment without quitting. So one of the major concerns that keeps people from taking their pet terrier out into the alley is the fear of injury, the fear of rat bites. Just danger is inherent to work. You can't remove it. But it's a difficult leap for a lot of people to actually allow their dog to be a dog and fully embrace its instincts. And because they never do that, they never get to see a dog that when it gets bitten by the rat, it gets angry and tries harder to kill more rats, or it learns from the experience and learns how to bite them so it doesn't get bitten. But these are tough little critters. Just few people ever give them the opportunity to work, so they never see what that means in action.
We're going to get on a campaign, Jeff Carlin and I, here on the Chicago Way, to have the mayor of Chicago bring you in. I think you could, like, if you could get a group of 50 or 100 blocks, you know, and address them and build and give us the leadership so we could build our own rat clubs, ratter clubs. Wouldn't that be cool with our own, like, logos?
That would be great. We have to talk about Richard Reynolds and the NYC group RATF, the Rider Alley Trencher Fed Society. He's got probably a lot more urban experience than I do in the rat catching realm. But there's very few people that have the experience of just going out and doing it. And you have to have a certain level of experience to catch rats. It's not because you can't, but the rats adapt so quickly. If you don't have experience, you don't end up being very effective.
One thing we want to dispel right here, as a man of science, which I am, I know some of you don't believe this, but I am. I love dogs, and once when I was a kid, I had pneumonia, and I told my parents that I was at home, and they said, I said, can I just call a few dog breeders? And I had my outdoor life and my Field and Stream, and I called every dog breeder of coon hounds that I could find. And the bill was, back then in the 60s, I think $125. So my dad freaked out. But what I'm saying is I love to talk about what dogs are bred to do. Zeus the Wonder Dog is bred for upland game. If you put him on upland game, he stops being the cuddly little Zeus that, you know, he's around the house. And he becomes who God and the breeders decided he would be. All his instincts, everything comes out. You can see You can see that in him. So how can we tell from our apartment dogs whether it's a good rat or not? What do we have to do to learn it?
Well, we're going to have to either give it a dead rat or give it a live rat situation. And training with live rats is legal, I believe, in all 50 states of the United States. So you can trap rats and use them in a cage. Or what I do is I take a puppy with me on a real rat hunt. The adult dogs kill a rat. You could kill trap one with a snap trap. And then I use the rat like a furry toy for the puppy and engage it, see how much interest it has. Does it shy away from something of a strong smell? Does it actively and aggressively go for the little dead body or the, in you know, some instances, the live rat in the cage? And that's typically the starting point.
So I catch a rat in a like a box trap or something, and then
yeah.
I take my dog out into a field or somewhere where he can find, you know, see it. I have the rat there, and I release it and let the dog just go after it like you would. I hate to tell this, people, but when you have a hunting dog and you have a puppy, you let it go crazy on pigeons because you want to build that prey drive. So is that how you do it?
Yeah, pretty similar. In my experience, killing it in actively a puppy or a young dog or even an adult dog that's never seen a rat, I don't actually want them to have contact with an adult rat because it's too dangerous. The only thing I'm trying to do is build the prey drive, so get them excited. And I'll actually spend quite a bit of time teaching a seek it command. So I'll use the cage and hide it in likely spots. So this is where I know rats are likely to hide. So I'll start hiding the trap or the dead body and using it as a look here, look, 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 or some type of search command so that I'm teaching the dog to work with me specifically to search at a command for rats. And I'll do that for quite a while before I actively introduce them to a live rat. The bite, a severe bite from a large rat could turn off a young dog or an inexperienced dog from ever actively physically contacting another rat again.
It's a little more dangerous than
a pigeon.
So it's like a talented fighter. You don't want him to fight the champion first. You want him to build it up, club fights a little bit.
You want them to build it up, and if it's in their instinct, you don't really have to teach them to kill. You just have to give them the opportunity.
How does a dog, a great terrier, like your mongrels, how does a dog kill a rat? What happens?
Well, it's usually done in about 1 to 3 seconds, and it includes grabbing the rat, hopefully behind the head, which it's not always possible at a full run, even for a good dog, and either biting it behind the head or shaking it so viciously that basically the neck and the spine is all instantly broken.
Can you hear it? Can you hear the snap of it?
You can hear it, and the rats also have a death squeal. So they scream when they die. And if you've ever been around any kind of death, death is a process, not a moment. So there's still nerve action and there's still other types of bodily processes that occur even after a mortal wound.
Two things we have to dispel right now because as a man of science, I know that cats will suck the soul out of your body when you're sleeping. And they're Satan's familiars of Satan. I can't stand them and I'm allergic to them. But I have some people, friends of mine, who say that, like Steve Dale, the pet guy, here at WGN, who says that feral cats do the job. We don't need to do what I want to do. And I say...
No, so...
Go on.
No way. No way. Feral cats are some of the biggest nuisance predators, and trap and release is some of the biggest joke around. Every feral cat that's caught should never be re-released. And cats do not catch large adult rats. Of course, there's an exception to every rule, and there's cats that kill rats, but it's quite rare. We go to all kinds of locations, and every location has barn cats, farm cats, house cats, and they still have rat problems. The cats plain don't mess with the rats, which are far too aggressive and dangerous to kill for the trouble worth killing them. And if they did, they'd kill what, one every week, one every 2 weeks? So the rats can, even if cats did kill them, the rats still outbreed how many they can physically consume.
How many? Now, you run a pack of, I think, four dogs, right? Four or five?
I typically keep four working adults and a young dog.
So how many can they kill in a day?
We typically go out for three-hour sessions because it's physically demanding work. So like your upland game dog, the dogs show us where the rats are hiding, and then it's my job to make the rats run. So that includes lots of tools, sometimes just cleanup, sometimes digging. That includes all kinds of stuff. And then when the rats run, that's when the dogs actually catch them. So we normally limit it to 3 or 4 hours. My personal record with three adult dogs and one puppy is 224 rats.
Hear that, Jeff Carlin, Catman?
Wow, it's impressive. Cats don't stand a chance. I don't think anybody should reasonably say cats would be it. Because I've got house cats, and they're useless.
Well, if they're not trained, if they're mousers, but as Jordan says, if you're on a farm,
right.
He's on a farm, he sees a lot of cats on farms, they don't do it. So what do we do to begin? If I'm a dog, I have a dog, a Jack Russell Terrier named Wrigley, actually a Parsons Russell, my brother's dog.
So you need to go find a regular source of rats. So you need to go out and investigate trash cans, garbage cans, an area where there's consistent rats every time that you go. And you need to start scaring the rats and seeing where they run. They're going to run the same hole, the same escape route every time. So once you discover where that is, you can actually go out with cardboard or garbage or duct tape or any kind of thing that you want, insulation foam, and you can block up their holes before you disturb them, so that when you're ready with your dog and you disturb the rats from the dumpster or the garbage cans, when they run away, their exit has now been blocked, and it gives you the vital half a second that your dog needs to catch it. So the hardest part is finding a consistent place where you can start bringing your dog and it's regularly going to be in contact with rats.
What kind of equipment do we need, like a stave or long boots where you tie them? You know, they can't climb up your jeans and bite you in the place you don't want them to bite you?
I've actually had a rat run up my pant legs, so it's real. I don't worry about that because it's only happened once out of thousands of times. But typically, like a plastic wiffle ball bat, like a kid's playground plastic bat, maybe a stick or a tool for flipping garbage bags, good gloves, a bucket for collecting your rats, a first aid kit for your dog. They're available via hunting websites. You probably have one for your upland game dog. And, you know, basic first aid stuff to stop bleeding, antiseptic, soap and water, baby wipes, that kind of stuff.
Right, because you have to take care. You don't take a rat or you don't take a hunter out every day, and you don't take a ratting dog out every day. You got to let them rest and take care of paws. You know, an upland game bird dog, sometimes their paws get carved up, and you just have to, you know, put antibiotics on, wrap them up, keep it clean. Tell me this: what are the best? Give me the five best breeds of rat dog.
Five rat breeds. Since we're in the United States, let's just put the rat terrier right up there at the top. We could also call that the Feist if you're in the South, but you're in Chicago. But, you know, most places of the U.S., they would call a rat terrier a Feist. We're going to have to put a Jack Russell Terrier up there, a Parsons Jack Russell. We're going to talk about the Patterdale Terrier just because it's probably one of the top ratting dogs in England. They're not too common, and I'm glad they're not too common because they're like a Jack Russell on steroids. And you don't really want people owning those kind of dogs that don't have a good outlet because they just destroy things. I'm probably going to say a Whippet, even though it's not a terrier, it's a sighthound. and they have a really strong prey drive and interest in chasing. The legs and speed come in useful when you're chasing rats on any kind of open space that a little short-legged terrier might have trouble catching. And I'm going to say maybe even a German Shepherd or something like that, because I've worked with quite a few of them that were really excellent rat-catching dogs. We could just kind of put in any dog for number five that has a desire and interest, regardless of what breed it is. A heeler, nondescript farm dogs, mutt dogs, any type of terrier mix. I've seen beagle mixes. I've seen dachshund mixes. So we could kind of just leave it up to any dog that has an interest for number five.
The two groups that will oppose me and you as I try to get the mayor to bring you here are the, you know, I love animals of all kinds and you should never eat them, John Cass, and the pet lovers who anthropomorphize their pet dogs or cats and think they're human.
The animal rights activists who kind of think that any death is cruel and unusual and you're deliberately causing it for joy and pleasure. And then the people that are, I can't believe you would ever allow your animal to do something that's dangerous.
But if you don't have risk, you're not alive as a man or as a dog.
I think it's both. If you don't ever allow the dog to have some, if you don't ever allow a terrier to have some risk, it probably has never once gotten to be a terrier.
Excellent. If people want to know more about Jordan Reed and his mongrel horde, or get into the sport of ratting, not this nonsense PVC, we don't kill rats club, which is stupid, but actual real ratting, where do people go?
They can find us information about me on our website, themongrelhorde.com. We're available on social media under the same addresses as well. So on Instagram, YouTube, and also Facebook.
Spell it.
I have a support group on Facebook specifically for people with interest in rodent catching dogs, where it's a non-hardcore atmosphere that's just for promoting knowledge and education and experience of how to train your dog around chickens, cats, how to deal with first aid, that kind of thing. So that's a good place to start. Some of the local terrier clubs, so a lot of places have a Jack Russell Terrier Club. There's probably one in Chicago, and some of the people that have been actively engaged in it probably have traveled somewhere to hunt their dogs. There's the American Working Terrier Association. So there is working terriers out there and people that do it, but there's a lot less of it than there should be. And you have to dig if you really want to get into it.
Jordan Reed, legendary rat catcher. I hope you will write a book along the lines of Tales of a Rat Man, which is the classic literature of ratting in England. Are you going to write a book?
I've had a lot of people get after it and ask me to write a book. I only have a GED education, so although I love to write, it's quite slow and difficult for me. My grammar, my kind of speech patterns are real difficult to decipher through written words. So if somebody helps prompt me, write the outline or kind of the helps me follow some steps, I'll probably do it. If it's totally up to me, it just probably would take me too long.
Jordan Reed, Rat Catcher, you can go to The Mongrel, MongrelHoard, horde.com, not The Mongrel Horde with a, not, you know, spell it the way I just told you and you'll find him. Okay? Thank you very much, Jordan, and we'll see if, once we get our rat clubs up and we're drinking and grilling brats and listening to tunes in the alleys and having a great time killing rats, we'll call you back. But just so you know, Jordan Reed told me the other day, the only good rat is a dead one, right?
I think if we get this league rolling, John, he should be our honorary Commodore.
Yes. If we get the league rolling, Jeff, he will be, and we'll bring him in. Thanks a lot, Jordan. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
Bye, man. See you.
Your hair looks fabulous, by the way.
Yes, I do have fabulous hair, do I not? In my, what was that, Ted Knight voice? The man who said that I have fabulous hair is none other than the discerning commentator and cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, editorial cartoonist, who has his own podcast, too, Prickly City, and his own strip, Prickly City, and his name is Scott Stanis. Hello, Scott.
Hey, John. It's been a while. How you been?
It has been a while, Scott.
And your hair does look fabulous today.
It does, doesn't it? I just can't stop looking at myself. Because I have a face for radio and a voice for print.
Ah, you're a Greek guy.
But my hair is okay. That's the only thing that's good. All right, Scott. So one thing you should know about Scott, besides the fact that we meet in cells of three as conservatives so that they can't find us all and break us at once, is that...
It's true.
It's true, right?
He's not kidding.
Is that he spent many, many years in Alabama, Jeff Carlin.
Yes, he did.
Did you know that?
And
you
know, don't hold it against him.
No, because I've been to Alabama with him.
Yeah, had barbecue.
Had barbecue with him.
At Dreamland.
At Dreamland with his lovely wife, Janine, Betty, and me. The boys were on a soccer tournament then. And I'd like to, Birmingham, what a wonderful city. And I'd just like to bring up the fact that Judge Roy Moore is in the news.
Yes, he is. Oh, my gosh. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the background on the special election, why Roy Moore won. Okay, so the governor, who is having an affair with his girlfriend.
Yeah, right. I forgot.
So he's fondling her. He was using state money and state funds to cover it up.
Right.
And then he hired her. But he wasn't using state money. He used his campaign money to hire her. It gets really messy. He's finally removed from office. But here's what happened beforehand. Luther Strange was the attorney general of Alabama.
Right.
And should have and began investigating the governor and whether or not he broke any laws. He the governor then says, you know, I will appoint you to the U.S. Senate. So the investigation gets dropped. So Luther Strange gets the U.S. Senate by dropping this investigation into the governor. So the choice in the runoff was between a corrupt son of a bitch, establishment son of a bitch, or a batshit crazy son of a bitch. That was the choice.
All right. To recap, as you already know, he was accused in the Washington Post of sexual assault, basically, of a 14-year-old girl. He's running for Senate now, right?
You're right.
He's running for Senate in Alabama as a Republican, which means... Basically, there shouldn't be any campaign.
Right.
It's a deep red state. But now this is dropped.
Yeah.
This happened 38 years ago. It's only on the word of the woman.
Well, there's...
And her mom.
There's also four other women who've come forward on this.
Four other women have come forward. He didn't sexually assault any of them.
He dated them as a 30-plus-year-old man. He was an assistant DA in I think it was Etowah County. And
they were in their, like, late teens, right?
Well, the oldest was 18. The girl who has the most in-depth story, she was 14. Another, I think, was 14, 15, 16, somewhere in that neighborhood.
And he was in his early 30s.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not defending them, okay? And if he's guilty of this, he should probably just take a long walk in the woods with the weapon of his choice and just not come back, because I don't know how you come back from something like this.
Right.
And still, can you live without honor? I think in the South, I don't know about up north, you get celebrated if you survive.
Oh, you get reelected.
But down in the South, it doesn't happen. Unless you're Bill Clinton, for some reason, I don't get it. But here's the thing.
Yes.
My dad was 13 years older than my mom. I had aunts who married when they were 14, 15. In this rural hills that we're from, that early marriage was almost encouraged in a way, kind of completely sexist, because they didn't want girls to have sex.
Right.
And then they wouldn't be fetch a bride price. It wouldn't, there wouldn't be dowries. There wouldn't be, there would be loss of face and honor, and there would be blood in the streets and killing in the mountains. And that's how tribal clannish societies are wherever you go. But in the South 40 years ago, was it odd for a girl in her teens to be dating a guy in his early 30s?
Yeah, that was a little odd. Although the age of consent, there's a lot of background. Can I give it to you? Do you have a few minutes?
That's why you're here, man.
Okay, the age of consent in Alabama. This is a typically Alabama story. When I moved there in 1996, it was you could get married at 14 years old without parental consent. And they actually moved it up to 16 years old, and they grandfathered in the 14-year-olds because if you were married at 14, got divorced, you could still remarry at 15. I'm not making this up. And I want to go on a side issue. I want full disclosure here. I know Roy Moore. I covered him for years. I find him to be a dangerous, dangerous, demagogic man of the worst order. I despise him as a politician. That being said, am I going to accept... and 100% any story that demeans him, I can't. No, I won't. I'm taking a deep breath right now and waiting for this story
but
to unfold.
But if you do, now I've been already accused of being a pro sexual assault of teenagers story because I didn't jump on this thing when it first broke last week. In the afternoon, I'd already written a column about Rand Paul getting his ribs broken and neighbor problems. And if you don't jump on if you don't jump on this with both feet and condemn Roy Moore,
right,
who is, in your words, and I trust your judgment on many things, not a very nice man, then you are yourself subject to the charge of at least what? Abetting sexual assault of minors.
Well, and I mean,
that's where we are now. There's a frenzy going on.
Right. There's a frenzy. And because of the social media, because we have the 24-hour news cycle, we're expected to jump on. There's no due diligence anymore. You know, there's no time to just take a step back and say, okay, you know, this is bad. Let's see what the facts are. Let's hear. Roy Moore, first of all, he's only issued a statement. He's not appeared in public.
Right.
He kind of fell off the face of the earth for the last week, which tells you that he knew the Washington Post story was coming out.
Yeah.
Now, as a journalist, and a damn good one, you look at the Washington Post story. You're shaking your head. What?
I've been covering politics as you have for many years. Jeff knows about politics, too. I get a story from someone who tells me XYZ about a candidate. And all I have is their story. Or their mom's story. Right? And there's many of them that you hear, sexual assault by women on women, sexual assault of men by men, sexual assault mostly by middle-aged white guys with power against people who don't have it because human beings like to use power to hurt others and get what they want. Do I go with a story that's 38 years old that I don't have any... All I have is someone saying so. It's not like Harvey Weinstein, who you had the tapes, the investigation in New York, you had credible witnesses. Not that these women are not credible, but you had a pattern of stuff. What have I seen here? I don't know yet. That's why I'm taking a step back. Am I wrong? I'll probably, by the time you hear this, I've already written a column. But at this moment,
Do I cartoon about this? Again, I come from a very personal perspective because I know the guy.
Would you expect this of Jeff Sessions?
No. Frankly, this surprises me about Roy Moore. I can disagree with someone violently politically and not think that they're horrible human beings. I really can't.
How about Mike Madigan? I disagree with him terribly.
I
do not think that he is capable of anything like this. If anyone ever said he would be, I'd say you're out of your bleeping mind.
No, but I think down in Springfield, he was more than capable of turning a blind eye to the culture that we're
now seeing. Yes, he manipulated it. He manipulated it, and he kept he didn't fill the inspector general, legislative inspector general post because he got burned on the Metro deal with his son-in-law. And therefore, we had 24 complaints that languished in Springfield. And now all this thing about Silverstein and beating him up is to cover, in some respect, yeah, covering Madigan's flank. I understand that. That's why I wrote about it. But, okay, let's go here. When you look at the Silverstein thing and Madigan and that business, you see that you have a sexual assault or alleged sexual assault, and you also have other agendas at play. I have one too. I don't think Mike Madigan's good for the state. Maybe that colored my commentary. You have Madigan trying to put the focus on Silverstein, so not as to focus on his misuse or, you know, not filling that post where people could complain. Let's take that a step to Washington now, guys. What are the agendas at play here? Let's say it's true. I'm not going to say it's not true. Let's just assume it's true, what was said about him a month out before the election. What are the other agendas at play?
Oh, yeah, I think there's no question that Roy Moore, it would have been the perfect a foil for the national media. He would have been, if he's in the U.S. Senate, he's not terribly bright. He's, like I said, demagogic, and he's nasty, and he would have been a perfect foil for them. So they went after him.
And he pulled out that gun to show that he loved the Second Amendment, which I thought, man, you don't play jokes with guns, dude.
Right.
I mean, I have gone, you know, I don't do that.
They've never seen the NRA do that. The NRA doesn't hold a rally and go, hey, guns, and throw guns.
And guns.
Right.
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition.
Right.
You mentioned the frenzy. I mean, I'm listening to the radio this morning, watching the cable news, and they're just like, you know, Louis C.K. all overing themselves on this story. It's crazy. It really
is. There we go. Okay, let's look at some of the political agendas in Washington, then we can move on to Louis C.K.
Oh, okay.
But first I need a prophylactic antibiotic or something.
Oh, yeah, some kind of.
All right, so and penicillin. Some sort of bleach. Okay, so Judge Moore is aligned with Steve Bannon.
Yes.
Steve Bannon, I don't think, really particularly cares for Judge Moore, but we'll use him. He's on the right, hard right, and on the anti-establishment right.
Yes. And Roy Moore also ran against a candidate who was endorsed by President Trump in a special election.
And he was endorsed by Mitch McConnell, not Roy Moore, but the other candidate.
Yes.
And Mitch McConnell releases a statement, old waddle neck that he is, turtleneck.
He does look like a turtle. Yeah.
And he does not have good hair,
no.
I have to say.
No.
Neither does Rand Paul, but who cares? So McConnell issues a statement. He wants Roy Moore to step down, basically. He says, if this is true, you should step down immediately.
Yeah.
So the moderates or I don't want to use moderate because that covers them. The establishmentarian Republicans want Moore out. They want to hurt Bannon and weaken Bannon. Bannon wants to hurt McConnell because he wants them out. All that is playing on top of this, and I'm not seeing that context right now in the early reporting. All I'm seeing is Judge Moore, 14-year-old girl. Okay, if it was my daughter, I'd shot him already.
Yeah.
All right? Judge Moore, 14-year-old girl. But I'm not hearing the politics behind it. Am I wrong in wanting to have the politics layered into this?
No. Well, you're talking about nuance, intelligence, and information, and we don't do that anymore, John. We just don't.
What's going to happen, Jeff Carlin? He's going to show up. When he shows up, I mean, how long is it going to take for him to step down?
He's talking about, I was just on radio, I was actually just on a Birmingham, Alabama radio station a few minutes ago, and he's talking about, they approached his campaign and said he'll be making public appearances beginning next week.
Here's my take on it. I think, tell me if I'm wrong, Trump wants Jeff Sessions out of the attorney general job.
Oh, I
see. You want to put on some tinfoil hats? Because I'll tell you this, when I heard Bannon say there's no such thing as coincidence, I got pissed off. That's what I've been saying. If I say it now, I'll be accused of being a Bannon guy, who accused me of being a liberal, by the way, once. So, I know, right? So, it was in Breitbart. Progressive journalist says Hillary should step down. Okay. So, Trump and his cadre want Sessions out, let's say. Here comes this story. You never know who dropped it. Could have been the Republicans, could have been Trump, could have been Democrats. Yeah. You never know. My feeling is it's always the person you don't suspect. So then who comes in to save Alabama as a son of his state? The Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. What do you think of that?
I think
Alabama?
That's possible. There's other really good, solid conservative candidates who could step in. There's a congressman who you should take a look at named Gary Palmer. And he ran what was kind of Alabama's version of the Illinois Policy Institute. Very conservative, very driven.
Thoughtful.
Very thoughtful and gets things done. I would look to him if Roy Moore next week says, I didn't do it in this this woman or the women come out with some kind of evidence, then he has to drop out. That's who I'd look to replace him.
If he doesn't drop out, what happens in Alabama?
There's going to be this came up again. You're going to have and this story broils and seems to have legs. You're going to see Roy Moore can't. It's too late to have him removed from the ballot. Apparently, he's running against a guy by the name of Doug Jones. Doug is a good guy, but he's crazy liberal, which doesn't fit anywhere but say here.
Maybe they should run that Virginia commercial in Alabama, see how that works.
Which one's that?
The one where the white guy chases all the minorities and wants to kill the little kids.
Yeah,
that would be good. Yeah.
So there'd be the third part is there may be a write-in that the conservatives, the Republicans who are afraid that the seat could go Democratic, would do that. But that seems to me to split the Republican vote.
And who's going to be in charge of that? Bill Kristol and McConnell,
the Republican Party of Alabama, they're pretty.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but I don't. That could happen, and you're going to have a Democrat, a liberal Democrat senator from Alabama.
One thing about Gillespie in Virginia, he's not from Virginia.
Is that right?
The other guy, he's from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. The other guy's from Virginia. You know, there's something about being from a state, particularly in the South. You got to be from that place.
Yes,
and if you're seen as poaching.
A carpetbagger? That's still a bad word down there.
Really?
Oh, yes, sir.
Huh.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so, okay, we don't know what will happen with Jeff Sessions and Mr. Moore, Judge Moore. I would suspect if they do have anything on him that he would just go away and never come back. And that's how I feel, because that's how he's lived his life.
Yeah.
I don't see any other way
out. Well, he's been removed as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. Twice.
For his craziness.
For his craziness, yeah.
Not the, let's have the Ten Commandments. That wasn't.
That was one of them.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, he was removed for that.
Come on, man.
Well, there's a court order. You take an oath and you abide by the laws of the United States or you don't.
Wait a minute. You can't have the Ten Commandments in front of the court? What's wrong with that, Jeff Carlin?
Church and state, John.
Lawgiver, baby.
Church and state. It was also, by the way, that statute was copyrighted by Roy Moore. I'm not kidding.
Oh my God.
Church and state.
At the base of it, it had the circle, the C in the circle, Roy Moore.
Nice. Okay, now, are we in the... So let's just get rid of Roy Moore right now. Roy, just go away, okay? Go away, don't come back. But we are now in the spot where everybody can accuse everybody.
Yes, and you make a very good point there. And here's the thing. There is abuse. You and I have seen it in our careers.
Abuse of what?
I think there's sexual abuse. I worked at a place where, a guy who worked there would give me a back rub. It was terrible.
Is that? I never gave you a back rub.
No, it wasn't you, John.
Okay.
It was horrible. And but my point is, there are terrible stories, and they do happen. It's similar to me, in my mind, to racism. There is racism. It does happen. But don't call everything racism. So now. You can say what is and isn't sexual harassment. I think it's one of those things like when the Supreme Court had pornography. We know it when we see it.
One of the stories that dropped out of sight that's in the context of what Mr. Stannis, Scott Stannis, Prickly City, at S. Stannis, what is it?
Yeah, that's it. At S. Stannis.
Stannis is Twitter handle and Tribune editorial cartoonist is what happened in... the Air Force prep school. Have you heard about this?
No.
Remember the commandant of the Air Force just about a few months ago gave a stirring speech because it was found that there was racist graffiti written on black students' lockers or desks or whatever. And he had and it became viral. It went viral. Oh, my God, racism in the Air Force. It was the prep school for the Air Force Academy, not the Air Force Academy exactly. But as the commandant of the whole thing, he held a speech, called them all in, all the young men and women, future airmen, and gave them a speech about, if you have any feelings like this, get out now. It was a tremendous, beautiful, stirring admonishment about what are the responsibilities and obligation of a person of honor who serves this country. But you know what happened just the other day?
What?
Jeff Carlin, tell us.
It turned out the suspect, if you will, in the graffitiing turned out to be a black man himself.
So a black kid was writing his own graffiti about racist, and that was the reason.
Well, so, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's...
And that doesn't mean that there is no racism, but that kind of cheapness undercuts the argument, the point being, didn't we teach that in a way? Didn't our culture, our media, Twitter culture, our outrage culture teach that young man to do that?
Sure.
And aren't we teaching young women to make these commentaries, whether they're true or not? To undercut, I'm just saying, that whole thing bothers me. I want to see evidence of stuff.
Right. And I think that's reasonable to ask. Maybe I didn't articulate the point well enough. It's just that we can now go forward and you can accuse anyone of anything. And because of the news cycle, it's impossible to prove a negative. You know, how long have you stopped beating your wife type of a question. And where do we go from here? I mean, these things are important. These things are, we need to address them, and they need to be addressed when they happen. The Louis C.K., we mentioned them jokingly earlier, but that's, you know, that
creep.
That is horrible. That's horrible. Weinstein, again, that's horrible. That's something. Now, you know, are we teaching a whole generation that no matter what and what is the normal interplay of male and female in a heterosexual context?
All that has to be litigated.
Yeah.
In the meantime, though, I'm glad Scott Stannis is here to tell us what happens in Alabama in the next weeks to come.
It's going to be interesting. What do I think? I think Roy Moore is going to stick around. The party's going to have to. He's not going to. No, Roy Moore is too crazy to remove himself from the discussion, as it were. That's not going to happen.
And there was a time in civilized America where a man would, a friend would come talk to the man and then would leave a pack of cigarettes on the desk with something else on the desk and then just walk out.
Well, you've mentioned words that I'm not sure your audience is used to hearing these days, and that's honor, civilized, courtly, gentlemanly. I don't know that those words apply anymore, John.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I just watched an El Cid marathon. I've been watching El Cid over and over and over. Can a man live without honor? For Scott Stannis, ace cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, his own podcast, Prickly City, via WGN, his own Prickly City comic strip. For Jordan Reed, the mongrel horde, the commandor of the new Carlin Cass Rat Clubs of America in Chicago. And for Jeff Carlin, the science-loving, bearded Blackhawk fan and producer of WGN Radio. And me, John Cass, your mild-mannered correspondent with great hair, right, Scott?
Absolutely.
We'll see you on another time. Thanks for listening to the Chicago Week.